the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL Wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. And this is part of our every year, our yearly opponent preview series. And in this edition of the show, we have someone who has not been on the show before because the Cardinals play the New York Jets once every 4 years, seems like once every blue moon. And joining me on the show for the first time is former site editor, now a contributor kind of across the NFL Wire sites now, is Billy Rossetti. Billy, how have you been? Thank you for coming on the show. And we've both been on the network for a while, officially. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to officially meet you too, man. It's great to be doing this. I'm doing great, you know, gearing up for... Can't believe another season's right around the corner. But yeah, really excited to be here, and you know, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Let's jump right into what happened last year. Obviously, entering last season were high hopes. Robert Saleh still had that defense kind of built, and they bring in Aaron Rodgers. They make the trade for Aaron Rodgers, only to have him last just a few plays before tearing his Achilles and then being out for the season. Well, he was out for the season, but they made it sound like he might come back. Ultimately, it is a 7-10 year. Not terrible when your starting quarterback is, you know, the guys that you ended up having. when you go with the quarterbacks that you ended up running out there between Zach Wilson and Tim Boyle and Trevor Siemian, 7-10 is not bad. If you could tell me, and they had, as expected, after Aaron Rodgers goes down, an awful offense averaging less than 16 points a game, and a pretty good defense that was number 3 in yards allowed, a top 5 defense in that sense, and 12th in points. Tell us, how did last year go after the hopes and dreams of Aaron Rodgers only have that come crashing down just after a few plays?
Yeah, you know, like you said, it's almost incredible that they even got to 7 wins with that offense, because you know you're basically trotting out the players that you were trying to run out of town, right? I mean, they were basically pushing Zach Wilson off to the side, flirting with Aaron Rodgers the entire way, and basically making Zach Wilson feel like he's a nobody. And now you're trying to prop him up and be like, hey, now we kind of need you because we didn't get a better backup quarterback option, and now you're the guy. And then he gets hurt later in the season, deals with a concussion. They try to bring him back. He's like, nah, I'm good. It was just watching the offense at times was just like an utter train wreck, right? Because it wasn't just the quarterbacks that were, you know, struck with injury or bad play or whatever. The offensive line was decimated, and they just couldn't get anything going. But like you said, the defense was just absolutely incredible. Like, one of the best, you know, and arguably the best going into this season. They really won them some of those games, and they almost had to be like perfect, right? You know, we talk about the whole bend but don't break. They bent as much as they could until they finally broke, because they had to be almost 110% every game, because they had to make up for the fact that the offense is only scoring like a touchdown and a field goal every game. So that defense really did its part, and then some, you know. So that was the biggest reason why they got to, you know, to 7 wins, which equaled their win total from a season ago, right? So in that sense, it's kind of like, okay, it's kind of good. There's a bit of a silver lining, and now we get these pieces back. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of hope to build on from there, from that sense, because – you know, if Rodgers coming back and everyone, it's like, it can only go up from here, right? Because like you said, this was like one of maybe the worst offense we've seen in quite some time. So it's almost incredible to just sit there and watch what actually unfolded.
I mean, you look at it. Now, they did have three 30-point games, which seems weird. That said, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games with 13 or fewer points scored. And then another where they only scored 17. Oddly enough, when they won their finale over the New England, the greater train wreck of the New England Patriots last year. It's very interesting because the offensive side of the ball didn't lack talent in terms of skill players. I mean, Breece Hall had nearly 1,000 yards on the ground and nearly 1,600 from scrimmage. You add Dalvin Cook, who didn't do anything. You got Garrett Wilson. You've got Tyler Conklin. But was this just a case of everything was basically on, and after on being on Hard Knocks, by the way, it was fascinating to see Aaron Rodgers behind the scenes. Nationally, you get some sort of vibe of what he is, but when it comes to ball, that guy knows ball. He knows technique. His the way he does things as a quarterback are just so flawless. I was super impressed watching the Hard Knocks bit in training camp and the things that he did.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the numbers for Breece Hall. Let's also remember he was limited those first few weeks of the season because he was still coming off his ACL injury from his rookie season. So they were still kind of limiting him those first couple games. It wasn't until maybe about a month into the season that they finally let loose on the reins and really let him get going. Yeah, and like you said, Dalvin Cook, that experiment just wound up being an absolute bust. I mean, that was one of the, for as much praise that that Joe Douglas has had with some of these draft classes, that was a huge bust on his part to give Dalvin Cook all that guaranteed money, and then he just sat back and did nothing. Really, the Jets got almost nothing out of their running backs besides Breece Hall. Yeah. So for him to have that kind of season coming off that injury with almost no help with a depleted offensive line, I think is absolutely incredible. But, yeah, like you said, Aaron Rodgers, it basically became the Aaron Rodgers show on Hard Knocks, didn't it? I mean, everything. I mean, there were bits and pieces of like other players, obviously, but it just felt like 45, say it was like a 60 minute show, 45 of the 50 minutes, it felt like we're dedicated to Aaron Rodgers. And I don't even know if that's like an exaggeration. It was like, Aaron Rodgers and friends, on HBO. It was just,
It's honestly, it's what the country wanted to see. We wanted to see Aaron Rodgers. We wanted to see how he fit into that locker room. I having watched Robert Saleh in the NFC West, I was fascinated by some of the things that he did there with the Jets. Being in the AFC makes it for someone like me out of just kind of AFC. And unless you're the Chiefs or the Bills, there isn't a lot of attention on it. I will say that looking on the defensive side of the ball, the pass rush was still great. He had a great year from Bryce Huff. Jermaine Johnson coming into his own 7.5 sacks. Quinnen Williams still doing what he does. He got 6 sacks from Quentin Jefferson, 5 sacks from Solomon Thomas, who, let's not forget that Solomon Thomas is basically completely busted out of San Francisco after being the third overall pick a few years back.
Yeah, no, he's done a nice job of kind of resurrecting his career there. That's one thing the Jets do really well is they have a stable of defensive linemen and rotate them really well. You really don't have a player that plays more than like 70% of the snaps. Of course, this year, and we'll get to this obviously in a bit, Bryce Huff was essentially swapped for Hassan Reddick, but you still have a lot of sacks there, bringing another former 49er in Javon Kinlaw. But there's still a lot. I mean, even a guy like Al Woods played pretty well for this team before he got hurt. But yeah, obviously you know, Quinn and Williams, it all starts with him. You know, he didn't have, like, as many sacks, obviously, as he did 2 seasons ago when he finally earned that big contract. But he's still a dominant force, you know, almost turning into that Aaron Donald type, you know, where you have to command so much attention, right? And then it kind of frees up everybody else. And we saw the breakout season from Bryce Huff. You mentioned Jermaine Johnson, who I think is going to continue take steps forward.
Jermaine Johnson come out of the college. I wish the Cardinals would have managed to get him. I loved that. His intensity, the size, everything about it said he's going to be good.
I even remember watching him at the Senior Bowl that year and just being like, you know, and I remember hearing the buzz like, oh my gosh, like this guy might be a top 10 player. And he falls, what was it, like 26, I think it was, something like that. So
I had him, I think, pegged to the Jets at one point of the mock draft in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they had the 2 top 10 picks that year.
Yeah.
Which, of course, wound up being Sauce and Garrett Wilson. So for them to also come away with Jermaine Johnson there, too, is like,
That was a haul,
you know. So as much as we sometimes bash Joe, you know, it's the reverse of what I said earlier. As much as we sometimes bash Joe Douglas, like the Dalvin Cook, you got to give him credit for that haul in 2022. You know, even Michael Clemens, who's another pretty good contributor to that defensive line, he came out of that draft 4th round. So, you know, you got some pieces there out of that 22 class.
Coming up next on the Rise of Seared podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about the offseason. What have the Jets done in free agency and in the draft? That's coming up next on Rise of Seared. We're back on the Rise of Seared podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, talking to Billy Rossetti over from Jets Wire. Talking now about the offseason. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers comes back, and that's perhaps the biggest impact that they're going to have. Before we get into that, Aaron Rodgers and training and mini camp, what do you view that as a problem? I've seen, like, he was there for all the voluntary part, but then apparently scheduled something important for mini camp. And how do you think that impacts things in the locker room, if at all? Because you hear a lot of things. Mm-hmm. and some are saying, you know, how is that going to look if there's any struggles later? You know, it was 3 days and he was there for all of it. But what's your take on his missing mini camp?
Yeah, it turned into a game of where in the world is Aaron Rodgers, didn't it? It turned out apparently he was in Egypt. Apparently he had a planned trip to Egypt because he wanted to go there for the longest time. There was a report from Connor Hughes of SNY that this was actually planned during his recovery from his Achilles. So I guess it just happened to coincide with mandatory minicamp. I personally don't think it's a huge issue. I mean, like you said, he was there for the entire training camp, the entire OTAs, which, you know, even last year he was there for a lot of these practices, which was something he was starting to not do toward the back end of his years at Green Bay. He was basically like, nah, I'm good. I don't need to go to these practices. 2 years in now with the Jets, he's at, you know, every practice. And, you know, he was the only, he was one of only 2 players that wasn't at minicamp. The other, of course, was because of his contract issue, and, you know, certainly Cardinals fans obviously know that name.
Yes, we do. Wow. Hassan Reddick. I'm still going to say this. As badly as the Cardinals mishandled Reddick at the first part of his career, I'm going to say that pretty much everyone else would have, because when he was drafted, nobody pegged him as a real impact edge guy. No one.
Right.
He didn't have the size. In the Senior Bowl, everyone was raving about his coverage skills. Everyone had him pegged as an off-the-ball guy. It happened to be. His meteoric rise was almost by accident, because it probably wouldn't have happened had Chandler Jones not torn his biceps in 2020. And then he goes on that tear, because there was a good stretch in that season as well. He went like 7 games in a row with no sacks, and then the sacks over the last 5 games were monstrous. But ever since then, he's been an incredibly productive player. And you guys traded for, well, the Jets traded for Hassan Reddick. With a little bit of angst there, there was the understanding, from what I recall reading, there was the understanding that he would be, like he said, he would be there for off-season work. But then has not been because of the contract. He clearly is in the last year of his three-year, $45 million deal that he signed with the Eagles. And hitting that age 30, he wants to cash in one more time. How tricky is that situation with Reddick? And do you think a deal is going to get done before the season?
Yeah, it is going to be a little bit tricky. I think, you know, for one, the Jets really don't have a lot of cap space right now. I think they're only sitting at about like $6 million or so in cap space, and obviously you need some room to operate during the season. And if I remember, I don't even think Malachi Corley's still, not that that's going to take up a lot of cap space, but you still got to get him in the mix. And again, you know, you'll have all the in-season stuff that you got to deal with. Now, if you extend Reddick, certainly that'll save some cap space, but yeah, it's like you said, he's going to be 30 years old, you know, not exactly a little bit passive, but still absolutely great. But,
well,
you know,
that's the type of player he is. That's where you worry that the production will come crashing down, because he's
sure.
all about speed and quickness off the line of scrimmage.
Sure. No, you're absolutely right. That's his thing. And, you know, I remember reading some stuff too with the Eagles, you know, would he like intentionally do his own thing to get sacks? I mean, you know, that's fine as a defensive player. You want to get sacks, you know, if you're kind of, I guess, bending the rules a little bit, so to speak. You know, I know there's like, you know, back and forth with some media out there in Philadelphia. So who knows what the what the actual story is there. But, you know, the Jets also don't have a great history of extending players this old. I think they've only done it like once in recent memory in terms of, you know, giving kind of like a new contract to guys 30 years or older. So this is a really tricky situation. And like you said, you know, he kept saying after he was traded, he was going to be at practices. He was going to do all this stuff regardless of the contract situation. He hasn't been here. No one's really heard from him. I do think a deal is going to get done. I think eventually they're going to lock him up. They got to make him happy. They got to get something, because, you know, a new face, you know, one of the new stars of your defensive line. He hasn't been to any practices. You at least got to get him rolling here in the summer at some point, right? So I think Douglas eventually will get something done here, and he should be good to go come training camp, which, you know, it's crazy to think is only a couple of weeks away.
It is. Any players of note who have departed in the offseason?
Well, on a similar note, obviously Bryce Huff is the first one. That, you know, we talked about the swap. That was really kind of the first domino for this team, right? Bryce Huff goes and signs for about $17 million a year for 3 years with the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, obviously the Eagles had that contract dispute themselves with the Hassan Reddick, which led to the trade to the Jets. They get a younger player in Bryce Huff, so that was kind of the biggest, and that's obviously, you know, a tough blow for the Jets, because they had plenty of opportunities to kind of lock them up beforehand, never really did anything. They sat, they waited, the price only went up, and ultimately he goes out and gets 10 sacks last season and essentially prices himself out of the Jets' range. You know, they couldn't even slap the franchise tag on him, because that would have cost, I think, about $21 million. If they would have did that, and there was no way they were going to do that. So obviously, you know, that's kind of that was the first big piece there. They also traded John Franklin Myers, who was, you know, a pretty valuable piece as well on that defensive line. Again, it came down to salary. You know, they were in a bit of a salary cap crunch. obviously the Hassan Reddick thing came through as well. So, you know, you got to pay him, all these other, you know, free agents and whatnot that they brought in. So Franklin Myers kind of becomes the odd man out. He gets shipped to Denver. And then obviously Zach Wilson too. Also, you know, they finally ended that experiment, quote unquote, also sending him to Denver. Of course, these were, you know, separate trades, but Zach Wilson now in a quote unquote competition in Denver. You know, it'll be really fascinating to see how that goes out. Although I think we kind of have an idea how it's going to
be. Bo Nix, we know that.
He's the pet project.
he's Sean Payton's guy.
He's Sean's baby. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and I've heard in like the draft topics, there was one guy, and it kind of, I like the description. Like if you kind of squint and watch Bo Nix, you see a little of Drew Brees. I'm like, that would make sense. big additions. They made a few additions that you go out and pay Tyrod Taylor really good backup money.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who can steady the ship if things happen with Aaron Rodgers again. You add John Simpson, guard, Mike Williams from the Jets, Javon Kinlaw from the 49ers, Tyron Smith, left tackle, and you know, minor lesser ones. They add Leki Fotu, former Cardinals defensive tackle, Isaiah Oliver, former 49ers cornerback, and as well in the back of the running back room, Tariq Cohen, who played for the Bears and then for the Panthers. Of the guys that were added in free agency and trade, we already talked about Reddick. Who do you think will make the most impact this year, and what is the hope for them this year?
I mean, I think collectively, it's definitely the three offensive linemen that they brought in. But if I had to pick one, it would certainly be Tyron Smith, because that left tackle position was kind of a turnstile in recent years. I know they put their eggs in Dwayne Brown's baskets the last couple of years. And I mean, he did what he could, but relying on a guy that's like 37, 38 years old and ended up having a few injuries, whether it was a shoulder, his back, whatever the case may be, kind of relying on him wasn't the greatest move on the Jets' part. Now, obviously, Tyron Smith ain't exactly the poster child for health anymore either, and he ain't exactly a spring chicken. But I think limiting him, which was what they'll probably do throughout the season, keeping him healthy in practice and whatnot, and just letting him loose in games, we know he could still be a really good left tackle, and that's obviously going to be huge, I think, for this team, that they at least have somebody locked in at least this year at that left tackle position in Tyron Smith. He solidified the right side as well with Morgan Moses. You mentioned John Simpson. Even in the draft, you know, Olufoshanu, swing tackle, can plug in either side if need be. He's been getting quite a bit of reps this offseason too, with Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses being out. So he's been getting some very valuable reps. So collectively, I think all those guys, because we talked about how this offensive line was just decimated with injuries last season, you know, and even not necessarily, you know, a free agent addition, but you get Elijah Vera Tucker back, who has missed numerous, you know, more than half the season each of the last 2 years with either an Achilles or a tricep injury. Ironically, both happened at Denver. So fortunately, the Jets don't go to Denver this year. So they don't have to worry about that scenario. But you get him back, and you have Joe Tippmann at center after a strong rookie season. So I think that group is probably going to be one of the biggest reasons if this offense takes a step forward. It's because those guys came in, they stayed healthy, they kept Aaron Rodgers upright, and they allowed this offense to move.
It does feel like, and from our perspective, and, you know, my co-host Seth Cox and I, we talk about the Jets, and one of the things when we look ahead, we'll talk about this in a little bit, is that there's a little bit of risk involved. Obviously, you're all in with Aaron Rodgers, and so you get some great talent. However, you know, guys like Mike Williams and Tyron Smith, incredibly talented players, the injury bug has been their issue. Even like guys like Lecky Fotu and Isaiah Oliver, Tariq Cohen, those are guys that have some histories with injuries. Javon Kinlaw, and so you're hitching your horse to guys that have been patched up, so to speak. And so that in a situation where you're trying to win right now, I get that. But you know, we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. And ultimately, it's going to come down to Rodgers' play and the protection he gets. I mean, no one could have predicted the Achilles popping like that just right away.
But yeah,
that's just how that sometimes goes. So coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and look ahead to the season that is coming. Talking about 2024 expectations for the Jets. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. And the Jets will be tested early and showcased a lot. They open on Monday Night Football against the 49ers. That's not easy. They're gonna play the Vikings in London. They have how it goes in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five of the first eight games are on the road. And then the Cardinals, they face on the road in week 10. The AFC East, it's tough. You've got the Bills, you've got the Dolphins, and the Jets. I mean, what are legitimate expectations for this team this year?
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like postseason or bust. You know, we've talked about the additions and how they're pushing to win now. Ideally, they win the division, get a home game, but I think right now for them, it's just about making the plus, right? I think they just want to get in the dance because it's just been so long. They just want a shot. And I think this is a team that if they can make the playoffs, you know, maybe they get a bit of a run, you know, win a game or two, start to feel good. You know, obviously it's tough to go and say, oh, they're, you know, legitimate Super Bowl contenders just because of how tough, like I said, the AFC East, but even, of course, just the AFC as a whole, when you talk the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bengals, the Texans, you know, and all these top teams. And we talked, of course, about all the risk with some of these key additions and, you know, the injury factors. So that's why, to me, I think right now, 10, 11 wins probably feels pretty good because chances are some of these guys may get banged up and you're going to have to wade your way through that, especially toward the end of the season. You know, they have the Bills, week 17 could get banged up going into that game. So that could be a tough one. So I think at least with Rodgers coming back, that's at least worth a few wins. And, you know, 7 wins last year, I don't think it's much to say they can get to double digits, to get to at least 10 wins, maybe 11. 12, you know, if things break their way, sure, but 10 or 11 probably feels...
kind of the sweet spot.
Kind of the sweet spot, absolutely.
And then, obviously, the ceiling, they have a potential Super Bowl ceiling. But yes, definitely the ability to, you know, to make their way through the playoffs, make a deep run, only to, you know, the downside would be if Aaron Rodgers has to face the 49ers in the Super Bowl, because the 49ers like to end Aaron Rodgers' seasons in the playoffs. Not that I would want the 49ers to win the Super Bowl, because that's a definite no. But the end of the season does look tough, because they're going to play Miami twice, the Rams, and the Bills. So...
Yep.
Four of their final five games are against teams who were in the postseason last year. Worst case scenario, say things don't go as well. I'm not saying that Aaron Rodgers gets hurt for the whole year, but what do you think the floor of this team is? Are you looking at a 7-8 win team if things are bad?
Yeah, I would say that's about the floor, 7 or 8 wins, you know. if the injuries start to pile up. And, you know, let's, again, like you said, let's assume Rodgers is there and it's kind of everything else kind of gets banged up. You know, maybe the offensive line gets banged up a little bit more like they have been, or Mike Williams isn't 100% throughout the season, which is entirely possible because he may not, he's probably not going to be ready for training camp. Probably going to start the season on the pup. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what his status is, you know, so, and how we'll say limited throughout the season he'll be. I think he'll be fine, but they'll definitely have to, you know, ease with him at times. So yeah, I would say about 8 wins, 8 and 9, you know, maybe they could still get to 9, even if things go kind of a little awry. But yeah, that, I would say still hovering around 500 is probably about their floor, because they still have, you know, plenty of winnable games on paper, you know, throughout the season, especially kind of in like that middle part.
Is Robert Saleh on the hot seat at all this year?
I absolutely believe so. Yeah, I think it's playoffs or bust. I think this is finally the year. You know, this is his fourth year. I get he's had injuries. I get, you know, things have spiraled out of control at times, especially last season. But this is also an owner in Woody Johnson that just wants to win. Obviously, he is like the rest of Jets fans. He's kind of tired of just
like, why back can't we do this?
Exactly.
Why can't we win?
Exactly.
Why so, can't yeah, we have a good offense ever? Our defense is always good. Why can't we score points? It's because the quarterback position. It's because the Jets can never develop a young quarterback.
Yes.
And then they, when they go get a quarterback, he gets hurt. So that's kind of the Jets' history. More or less, my entire memory, I'm 47 years old. My entire memory of the Jets in my lifetime has been an offense, just, you know, the quarterback position, whether it's, you know, an old Ken O'Brien, you got Chad Pennington, you've got who was, I mean, when you look back at Chad Pennington longingly, you know that the quarterback situation has been questionable at best. When you look at the
Mark
Cardinals,
Sanchez.
When you look at, Mark Sanchez, Sam Darnold, it's great. It's great. Hey, Cardinals fans, no, we understand. We understand. We've had our share of issues as well. Now, looking at that Week 10 game against the Cardinals, how do Jets fans view that game? Obviously, healthier Joe Rodgers, that's a very big challenge, but how is that game viewed by fans in terms of perspective? Is it that they kind of penciled a win, should win challenge, or is it considered a must win?
I think they're kind of penciling in as a win. They likely feel there's obviously a lot more talent, especially defensively. I think they feel the Jets are going to be much more talented on that side of the ball. Now, obviously the Cardinals, you know, there's plenty of talent. I think quietly this is going to be a pretty sneaky good offense. You know, I know people have talked about how the Cardinals quietly had a pretty good run game last year.
Yeah, the number 4 in the league.
Exactly, yeah.
And they were able, like, they couldn't score a lot of, they couldn't stop anybody, but they ran the ball on everyone on the 49ers. Like, literally, nothing mattered, except for the Browns. They didn't run but they also didn't have their starting running back. They also didn't have their starting quarter. Like, they started a rookie, Clayton Tune, against the Browns. He was the sacrificial lamb that year, that game. But I need to splice this back in because I completely forgot to talk about the draft. So moving on to the draft, I'm going to move this back to the other segment. Moving on to the draft, the Jets picked up Olufoshano in the first round, Malachi Corley, one of two third-round picks that haven't been signed. Trey Benson, Cardinals Trey Benson, is the other one right after him. I think Benson's waiting for Corley to sign to kind of do his deal. You got Braylon Allen out of Wisconsin, running back, a quarterback in Jordan Travis, Florida State. Another running back, Isaiah Davis, out of South Dakota State. Quantes Stiggers, who played for the Argonauts in the Canadian League. And then Jalen Key, safety out of Alabama. Where is Fashanu projected to play as a rookie? Is he going to be in the starting lineup, and where do you think that'll be?
For now, I think he's going to start as the swing tackle because you're going to have Tyron Smith on the left side and Morgan Moses on the right side. But Fashanu will be that first guy in if something happens to one of those two. And, you know, he's been getting a lot of reps this offseason because they've been, you know, holding Smith out a little bit, kind of giving him some rest. Moses has been coming back from his injury. So Fashanu has been getting a lot of work, but I think ultimately he will be the left tackle of the future, you know, no later than week one of 2025. And I know it wasn't the flashy pick. I know a lot of people wanted them to take Brock Bowers just to add another weapon, but they needed some long-term stability on the offensive line. And ultimately they got that with Fashanu, who actually reminds some people of DeBrickashaw Ferguson, you know, the great longtime left tackle of the Jets. So I was, you know, completely fine with the pick. And they ultimately, you know, remember they traded down a pick because the Vikings really wanted J.J. McCarthy. So the Jets were able to swap there, still get Fashanu, gain the day three pick, and kind of do their thing from there.
Anyone else? Like, you go to Corley, you go to Allen. Is there anyone else on that list that is expected to impact year one in the 2024 season? Is Corley expected to have a role in the offense?
I think he will a little bit. I think they'll find a way to, you know, manufacture some touches for him. We know he can be really dangerous with the ball in his hands. Now, a lot of his stuff, of course, was kind of, you know, short yardage screens, stuff like that. But, I mean, they called him the Yak King for a reason. You know, when he gets the ball in his hands, whether it's screens, jets, whatever the case may be, he is dangerous in the open field. And with the talent that the Jets have elsewhere on that field, it's going to open up some holes, I think, for Corley. So, you know, he may not be, like, immediately in the starting lineup because I think, you know, they still kind of like Xavier Gibson a little bit, Jason Brownlee a little bit. But I think ultimately they will get Corley involved, and I think you'll see him, you know, maybe eventually get to that, you know, perhaps number three, number four role. But, yeah, I think there will definitely be times where he's going to get the ball in his hands and he's going to make some plays.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast of a Seraph Cardinals Talk on the Web. We've previewed and talked about the New York Jets, whom the Cardinals will face in Week 10 at home, a team that has Super Bowl aspirations, has a Super Bowl ceiling, but it's kind of postseason or bust. Billy, we can find your stuff on Jets Wire. Is there anywhere else? I know you're going to be contributing across the NFL Wire. Is there any other place, social media, that my listeners can find you?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Billy_Ricetti. That's RICCETTE. I dabble around on the NFL 33 Substack. I do work with 4for4 Fantasy Football, scouting reports, new stuff like that. So you can check me out there. I just latched on with FF League winners as well. I'm going to do some Ravens and some Penn State work there as well. So bouncing around a little bit there,
so
keeping busy.
Billy will give you all sorts of content if you're looking for all sorts of content. Thank you, Billy, for your time. that will wrap up this edition of the show. We'll be back again soon. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. We'll be right back.
Roll!